Black Type Thoroughbreds is a new thoroughbred racing partnership that gives you the chance to get in the game. Not many of us have the money to buy our own professional sports franchise, but you can have a somewhat similar experience in the world of thoroughbred racing with a partnership like Black Type. Black Type's deep connections in the industry mean you're going to get top-level access to the best horsemen and horses. It's a great way to get involved. People are always asking me what they can do to learn more about ownership. Being involved in a partnership like Black Type that has a low markup and great people involved like Jake Ballas is the best way, I can tell you, to get involved as a thoroughbred owner. For more information, you can reach out to Jake directly and check out the information on his website. That web address is blacktypetb.com. You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you from the Little House on the East Side in Saratoga. Big weekend of fun things happening up here, highlighted by the Whitney Stakes. You're going to have an opportunity to see some In the Money live programming if you're in the area on Saturday. We've got two things going on. 9:30 a.m. at the bandstand in the backyard. I will be there. Duke Matisse will reportedly be there. We'll see if we can bring JK into the mix as well, potentially, depending on what he's got going on. And then at 10:30 over at the Brentwood, which is this cool boutique hotel slash cocktail bar right across the street on Nelson Avenue. We're talking about nestled in between the Horseshoe and Mexican Connection. Roughly 10:30, JK and I will be going over, I'm just going to decide now, the early pick five, let's say, to differentiate it from the other content we're going to be doing on the shows. That one, I don't know if I'll podcast it and put it up. We'll have to see how that goes, but you can definitely come and check that out live. Cool cocktail menu I sent out on Twitter. Check it out. Going to break format in the show today. JK is going to be here in a minute, but we're going to start off with a chat I did with an old friend, and that's coming up right now. And now I'd like to welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast our friend Matt Bernier. Matt, what's going on?
It's happening, Pete. Bright and early here on Friday morning. I'm trying to get my act together. It's, you know, I'm not usually a morning person, so I apologize if I sound a little shaky here.
You're a little hoarse. Your mellifluous tones have a little bit of a rough edge. I kind of like it though. It's rugged.
It's rugged is a nice way of putting it. I think it sounds like a bit of a train wreck, but that's just me.
Well, thank you for getting up bright and early and joining us. A lot of listeners have been asking to have you on. Obviously, you're in a different employment situation than the last time we spoke. I am of the opinion that you very often in these situations, within a short amount of time, you talk to the person involved and they say, best thing that ever happened to me. I feel like in your case, you may have already reached that point a couple of days in. How are you feeling? How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, it's just, and I've said it to everyone, and I'm sure I sound like a broken record. It's just one of those business things. I don't have any ill will toward anybody at the racing form. It's one of those business situations where certain decisions needed to be made. Me personally, everything seems to be good. Checking out a few different things, you know, it's still rather fresh. I mean, we're talking, it's been less than 2 weeks. Just, you know, talking with a number of different people. I'm still open to any and all sort of options, and I'm just trying to figure out what the right move is for me and my family going forward. I'm getting married in October, so I don't want to make any sort of decision that, you know, I think you're just trying to look at everything from a bigger picture as opposed to just the immediate, oh wow, we need to get something straightened out here sooner than later. You know, I think it's one of those instances where I want to make sure whatever move I'm making here is the appropriate move for us long-term going forward. You know what I'm saying?
Makes perfect sense. And congrats on getting married. That is great news. But it's not like you're sitting on the sidelines all the time, still your TV's Matt Bernier, after all, and you're going to be on NBC this weekend. And you've got your own little thing going on to carry – I shouldn't say little, but you're carrying on with your shows, which is something that that I encouraged you to do and was very glad to – I'm sure you would have done on your own anyway, and I'm very glad to see. So tell folks where they can see and hear you at the moment.
Yeah, and I appreciate your support, you and Jonathan, throughout this whole thing. It's been great, and I took your advice to heart, and I said, you know, rather than miss any sort of time, let's just get right back on the beam and keep firing. So I'm over on YouTube. I have my YouTube channel for right now, Matt Bernier. I tweet out the links whenever I put something up. If you head on over there, I do something similar to what I've done in the past. You know, on Thursday, it's a bit of a preview, and I'm still trying to figure out how I want to handle the early week sort of situation where, you know, do I go over each individual stakes race? Do I try to put a little sort of thing together as I used to? I'm still in that sort of process of figuring out what the right move is, what, you know, how things are going to look going forward. And I said it with the first podcast that I did, and that's the new title now. It's the Matt Bernier Podcast. I said, you know, I don't know what the future of this holds. I don't know if it's something that will be happening for, you know, for the foreseeable future, or if it's going to be something that is sort of a one or two off and then it goes away. But for right now, my intention is to keep going in a similar fashion to the way that I've always done it. And if something happens with a work situation where that no longer can be the case, then so be it. But until that time comes, or until the time that I make a decision one way or the other what the right move is, I think this is probably how things will go. So Matt Bernier over on the YouTube channel, please subscribe. Questions, comments, the whole nine, let me know. And again, I tweet most of this stuff out anyway.
I'll go ahead and sign up myself. I've been seeing the hits on Twitter, but it's nice to be able to get the email when the new shows come up. And the Twitter that people should be following, that most of the listeners probably are, but if some of you are behind the times in this, and I think I can get this right, @Bernier_Matt. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
When I said that, you know, 300 times back in the old DRF podcast days, some things stick in the old head. And before we get on to talk about just an overview of the Saturday stakes at Saratoga, we're not going to put your feet to the fire for picks. JK and I will be talking about that later in the show. But I want to hear specifically when you're going to be on NBC. When can folks see you on the box?
5 o'clock Saturday afternoon, 5 o'clock Eastern, NBCSN will have the Grade One Test and the Grade One Whitney. You know, they may not be the largest fields, and we'll dive into it. But I think they're both really fun races. I think you can go, you know, a few different ways in those spots. So you may not have 13 or 12 or, you know, 10 horse fields, but you're going to have two competitive races. I think that should be fun and interesting to watch.
They definitely have some star power attached. Let's start backwards, and we'll go with the Whitney. This is a pretty interesting field, as you say. You've got the top-rated horses in the division showing up. It's always fantastic when you can see that. Who are, again, not to make a pick, but who are you the most sort of interested to see run in terms of a horse that, you know, maybe has a chance to be on top of this division at the end of the year?
I think a lot of people will default to the two horses coming out of the Met Mile, and I can understand entirely, the favorite McKinsey and then Thunder Snow. And to be honest, I look at it in a very similar light. I could see one of three or four horses winning this race. I think both of those horses are prime players. The critical aspect for me with the Whitney is it just doesn't look like there's any real confirmed front runner in the race. And I think that could really lend itself to a fascinating development where, you know, it's one of those things where I don't think people immediately look at a horse like Thundersnow and consider him, you know, a pace horse. But at the same time, he did win the Dubai World Cup a couple of years ago outright on the front. Granted, that was a very speed-friendly racetrack at Maidan that evening that he did that. But I think there's a chance that he's the speed nearest the rail, especially if you get some scratches from two of those horses inside. Keep in mind, Imperative was never going to be really that close to the front regardless. And Monongahela, you know, that most recent run, he was much closer to the pace, but I don't know really where that race came from. If those horses are gone, I could see a scenario where Sumian's aggressive. Personally, I'd actually prefer that. Just send him, use your speed, use your sort of tactical ability. And I know the big thing for me, too, with those two horses, the distance will come into play. McKinsey, I don't think he is incapable at 9 furlongs, but I think that's when you start to push his sort of boundaries. I think he's better at a mile or a mile and a 16th, whereas with Thundersnow, I think he only gets better as the distance gets longer. A mile and an eighth, a mile and a quarter. I think he's a proper stayer with some real ability. And then the other wild cards in this race, you know, Preservationist, I think he's really nice. Boy, he's had some physical issues, and I know he won that most recent run, Suburban, in impressive fashion, but he did something a little bit peculiar that I'm not really a big fan of, rounding the far turn. He was very early with his lead change, and a lot of people have started to roll their eyes hearing me talk about lead changes, and it's fine. I apologize if your eyes are glassed over here.
No, but it's important.
It's usually not a good sign when they do that early. And again, for a horse that's run eight times as a six-year-old, I'm probably not in a rush to be betting him at a short price on Saturday.
There's so much to unpack from what you said. Let's go back to talking about the idea that Imperative and Monongahela might scratch. Both are cross-entered, Imperative at Mountaineer and Monongahela at Park. So that's where that speculation comes from. Then, I mean, I like the idea of Thunder Snow as a front runner. We'll have to see. I'm still not sure. Now, I was on radio with our man Anthony Stabile yesterday. Wasn't watching as closely replays and things. But if the rail is anything like the rail was last weekend, I wonder if anyone will alert Christophe Soumillon to that. I wouldn't want to see him. If it was the rail of last weekend, I would not want to see him going straight down there. But, of course, with that kind of speed, you could just park 2-3 wide. We saw some really canny front-running rides, even with the rail in the state it was last weekend. But it is just another little interesting X factor. And then the third thing I want to touch on is your point about the lead changes, and it absolutely matters. And the analogy that I would use is, think about when you're coming back from the, maybe this is only a New York City analogy, so apologies to folks in the rest of the country, but you're coming back to from the grocery store with that really heavy bag, and you're switching from one arm to another so you can do it fluidly. When you start having to switch it every, when it's every long block, you're in pretty good shape. When you start having to switch it back and forth, it does suggest a little bit of extra tiredness, perhaps some sort of underlying issue, especially for a horse that has that kind of history. Who knows? But I mean, I think it's certainly a valid point to bring up. And I'm sure over the years, Matt, the ability to notice those early and or really late lead changes has helped you to identify some winners. Yes.
Oh, definitely. And I think too, it's just one of the, it's a good sort of, for me anyway, I found it to be a good exercise to get in the habit of taking a look at and seeing. And I think it can go a number of different ways. It can tip you off to a horse that maybe has an underlying physical issue. And again, I mean, it wouldn't be a stunner with a horse like Preservationist, who's run eight times as a six-year-old. And then on the flip side, you can look at it with the early horses, with the two-year-olds, where for me, it's a sign of professionalism. If they go out there and do everything the way that they're, air quotes, supposed to right from jump, to me, that's a positive sign, not just that they're precocious, but they actually go out there and they know what they're doing, as opposed to some of those horses that are just naturally fast, but they're out there flailing around in their left lead. Usually that's not necessarily a recipe for success going forward. I like to see early horses or young horses be professional, go out there, act the way that they're supposed to do. It's the same way for me. I compare it to a pitcher in baseball. You may have all the talent in the world, but if your mechanics are terrible, that could probably, I don't want to say probably, it could be a sign that potentially there could be something down the road for you, whether it's an injury or something along those lines, whereas whether it's a pitcher or a quarterback, if you've got those perfect mechanics, you have a more likely chance, or the likelihood of perhaps continued success or continued injury-free sort of runs. Those are things that I think just it's important to keep an eye on anyway.
I think it's a good point, and when you think about it in terms of repeatability, that's really what we're looking for. We want the paper to be something that's going to go forward. So if you can identify a reason why that horse might not go forward, sometimes that can be enough to change the way you think about the race and have you avoid a potential trap when you think you're getting a trip, to allude to another program. Let's talk about this test for a minute before we let you get on the road and get to Saratoga. We talked about the star power in here. Let's start with Covfefe, who everybody, including me, after the race in Baltimore, was talking about the likelihood of a filly and mare sprint champion. What's your take on the last race from Covfefe?
I thought the Roxalana was good. From a numbers standpoint, she came back down to earth. But when you take a look and see, she was taking on older horses. And I thought she did a lot of work in that race. Down on the inside, they hounded her throughout. The opening quarter was really swift. And she didn't totally pack it in. I didn't think it was an offensive effort by any stretch. Now, it was a far cry from what she did in Baltimore two starts back. And that's the thing for me that makes this race very difficult to make a call on, because for the most part in her career through five lifetime starts, she sort of is what she is. She's very talented, but she's a mid 80 type. And then all of a sudden you've got that Miss Preakness with the 107. I have no sort of quips or qualms of saying this. If she runs to the Miss Preakness, she's winning the race, period. Nobody can run with her with that kind of an effort. I just don't know if we're going to get that on Saturday. And then the pace dynamic for me is really intriguing, because I think she does her best when she is out there dictating things on the front end. And with Serengeti Empress down on the inside, I could see a pretty real scenario where those two go hammer and tong and really throw it down early.
If this does end up being a pace meltdown, is it who do you think the beneficiary will be?
Well, I keep going back to Bellafina, and as much as I like her, I've always been a fan of hers. I'm starting to get a little bit curious. I think this is really where she'll shine. I think she's a one turn horse, 7/8 of a mile. I think is really going to hit her between the eyes, but I think you can poke some holes in her, not just because of the two trips to Churchill Downs, for whatever reason those races didn't work, but also go through all of her big wins. I'm starting to get a little bit curious about the horses that she was beating. She really hasn't beat anything as far as severe quality is concerned, or significant quality. So I'm torn on her at a short price. I keep going back to Royal Charlotte, and the concern for me with Royal Charlotte is not the professionalism or even the figures, because the 114 time form rating that she earned most recently, that's the highest in the field. The high 80 buyers are definitely competitive in here. My bigger concern, and it sounds a little bit silly for a horse that's 4-for-4, I'm not sure what she's beaten from a quality standpoint, and is she going to be able to handle that hike up in class? From a running style standpoint, I love her in a race like this, because I could see the inside three kind of setting a legitimate tone, and then she can just sit back, make that move rounding the far turn like she did in the victory ride, and go on with it. But there is that nagging suspicion for me, or that concern of, is she really ready for this level? Can she handle this caliber of company? Because this is a salty group.
It certainly is, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. One last question on the test, and then I will let you go. JK, who's going to be here in a minute, I actually see him out there in the green room now, a.k.a. my front porch, and he has a bet with Craig Burnick. We're going to be talking about this a little bit later in the show, that Serengeti, he said after the Oaks, that Serengeti Empress, I believe he said, will not win another race before she retires. I think that might have been amended to we'll never win another grade one. So let's assume it's the second scenario. Who's going to win this race? Craig Burnick saying she will win another grade one. JK saying she will not.
And Jonathan, he and I spoke about this a few months back after he and Craig made this little side wager. The difficult thing to make a call on with a filly like this is when she's allowed to dictate things on the front end, she's a bear to run down. And I think there's a scenario where, look, I think it's unlikely to happen on Saturday, but who's to say she comes back in the cotillion and the race comes up relatively soft as far as pace is concerned? You could see the Kentucky Oaks all over again, and it wouldn't surprise me. I'm going to lean toward Jonathan in this spot simply because I think we are at a point now where there's – in dirt races, it seems very unlikely or very infrequent anyway, and we just spoke about the Whitney with a race that seems like it's rather paceless, but it seems unlikely in dirt races of the highest caliber that there's not going to be any speed. I would assume someone will keep her honest early on, and to date, I think she has to have the lead. I know she broke her maiden coming from just off the pace, but until she does that against better horses, I won't be betting on it. If she finds the right field and nobody will go with her, she can absolutely win any kind of a grade one. I guess I would just be willing to bet that more often than not in these races of this stature, there's going to be somebody else to keep her company up front and that could compromise her.
All right. Matt Bernier, thank you so much for your time today. Check him out on NBC. Check out the new Matt Bernier podcast. You will find his proper selections in those formats. But we did want to talk over these races and just check in with our old buddy. And we look forward to seeing you a little later this afternoon at the Paddock Bar.
I will touch base with you when I get up there, my friend.
TV's Matt Bernier. All right. And now I'm going to bring in the usual co-host of this program. He is the man, the myth, the legend, the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's going on?
PTF, what's the word? You missed out last night, by the way.
Oh, you guys had a good dinner?
Nove. I have heard about Ronnie Ebanks, but I've never really met him.
He's a character.
Oh, he's nuts. I got this video. He was like, I'm not
blackmail
kidding.
Potential here?
No, he stood up on the table and was like singing, like had the whole restaurant paying attention, but lucky the owner was sitting at his table, so he was allowed to do whatever he wanted, I guess. And then he took like two jars of spaghetti sauce and put them up to his eyes like they were binoculars and did a fake race call of like Ali Sheba. I mean, it was hilarious. He was at the top of his lungs.
The love man, LASIK on.
That's what I've heard. The love man. Yeah, it was funny. So anyways, you missed out last night. Good food, good good laughs. Double R. Everybody was in good form.
I did not miss out. I mean, I did, if I can ever master the two places at once thing, in that sense, I missed out. But cannot complain at all that my good friend, tournament player, Jersey Joe Ward, rolling into town, had a chance to catch up with him. We did a little Boca Bistro action, pint-sized sessions on either side. It was very pleasing and a little more civilized than watching the love man go full on.
I can imagine so, but it was a good one. Ladies Island paid for dinner as well.
Yep, that was great.
She was extremely impressive yesterday, and I know that the boys were very happy with that performance to get her up here. Double R had his little speech at the end, was very touching. He said that he was very happy to be partnering with Paul and Duke, and that they've been big supporters of him and Florida Racing, and they had never really been involved in Florida Racing until him, and he appreciates them, and that this was his gesture to them to bring her up here and get them a win at their home. At their home track in front of their friends and family, and that this one was for them, and it meant the world to them. It was very touching.
That's cool.
You know, especially for a guy who is usually all jokes, criticisms, and attacks. He'll get after you now. He yelled at me the other day from about 80 yards away about my yellow shoes as I was approaching the backyard.
Speaking of the love man, that sounds like something he would be sporting. But yeah, Rich Averill, he's been a guest on the show. He was a big hit on the show, and we're going to have him back at some point. I was thinking of maybe, gosh, I mean, I don't want to put too many people up on that stage, but he'd be another one to consider. Maybe we'll give you Saturday off, and we'll drag Double R up there. I doubt you'd be offended.
No, not at all. Yeah, if you get Duke and Double R, that would be a nice little combination. I'd come sit in the stands. Not that I'd be at the house enjoying the day off, but that would be a good one. Those two are a ton of fun.
I'll see about getting that accomplished. We're dealing with a new microphone. I spent all of $15 on it. You can probably hear the P's are a little pumpy. There's probably a setting to fix it. I'll ask a proper sound man like DJ Unstable. But anyway, bear with us on that. It's not bad. It just doesn't sound as good as usual.
One more thing I forgot to tell you about Double R is the other night we went to 15 Church, which is arguably one of the nicest restaurants in Saratoga, you know, probably the nicest, or 1A, 1B, or 1A. I added the third. It was three entries. I think that'd be like a 1X.
Put a 1X, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's rock solid. I've been there. It suffers from what I would call the Saratoga problem, which is it's hard when you have a lot of, like, people – front of the house and back of the house who are, you know, in or just summer employees. It's hard to keep up a consistency of service. And we've had a little inconsistency, but that's why I like to cook in the backyard.
Our server, Robert, was phenomenal. I guess Double R had dealt with him quite a bit. He was very good. In fact, he was so good that Double R put him up to a hoax. He came down to my end of the table and said, "Hey, man, we're really happy that you're here. We're glad that you came to dine with us. But you can't wear those cut-off jean shorts." And he asked me to keep the tablecloth over them because the owner was really upset that he had let me in with those shorts on.
That's
so
amazing.
Then for like about 3 minutes, I was semi-annoyed, but then even more like uncomfortable. Like, oh, dang. Like,
He got you good.
Yeah,
how did they reveal what was the punchline? Like, as far as you, did they just start laughing in your face?
When he brought my food out, he brought out another tablecloth and covered up my shirt, too. That's when I knew.
That's really fantastic. That's great stuff. Well, I clearly need to get back in the house there, and I know which waiter to request now, because anybody with that level of sense of humor is A-okay with me. So, no easy way to talk about this on the show, JK, but I hear there's a petition on Twitter to remove your title as the People's Champion because of recent events.
Yeah. Look, you know, I was asked to report the changes that were made to the pick six, and I did that. You know, I took the press release, I took the notes, I reported the changes. And, you know, I think people that listen to this show and people that have listened to us and hung out with us and know what we stand for and what we are, know where we come from and where we're at when it comes to certain things. So, I mean, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I do want to just add that I am an opponent of the rainbow, whatever you want to call them. These, I guess we'll just call them rainbow pick sixes as opposed to traditional pick six. I'm actually working on a piece writing about it, and I'm going to save most of my comments and any debate until I have a chance to really put my thoughts together, put them down there, do all the proper math, and make sure that, all the ducks in a row. I don't want to have this conversation and not have it be fully formed. So I think we put a pin in this, and we talk about it again when we have a little more information. If you want to argue with some of the points I make in the paper, we'll do that on air. It's not like we're trying to hide anything here, but I just feel like today isn't the day to have this conversation full on, if you're cool with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, there's a $2 pick six carryover today, which is Friday. There's a 54,000, 50-something thousand $2 pick six carryover today. So if you love that bet and you're a traditionalist, then I'm assuming you're going to be involved. And then Sunday is a mandatory payout for the $2 pick six. So Saratoga Derby Day, there's that, the mandatory. So if you
say if you're a traditionalist, I say if you like math.
Fair enough.
Anyway, we're not going to go too far down that rabbit hole right now, but it will happen. That debate will happen on the show. I don't know if it'll be a debate. Maybe it'll be a lot of agreement, but we'll see what happens and what the JK's role is going forward as far as the new way of doing the pick six in New York. We are going to talk about some stakes races from Saturday. Did you like my idea, by the way? Maybe if I get Duke and Double R, I'll just do like spot plays and I'll get their takes on the stakes in the early show that'll go up as the Naira Betts show on Saturday. And then maybe we'll do the early pick five over at the Brentwood. Is that smart?
No, I think we should probably do production meeting in the middle of the show.
Yeah,
I like what you're doing with that, with Duke. Because Duke and they look at everything. Duke, Double R look at everything. So you can have them, not that I don't look at everything, but they fully full meal deal all the time. So you could have them do spot plays, stakes, and then we'll do late pick five because everyone loves the late pick five. It's got all the stakes in it. It's got the Whitney in it. My opinion could possibly be different than Double R's and Duke's, so it's not like people are going to get the same thing.
I just feel that then this show is the same as the thing we're doing at the Brentwood.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're going to do the stakes now, and that's how much of the late pick five?
Pretty much all of it,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah,
that's
the problem.
All right.
I don't like doing the same show.
That's why you get the big bucks, I guess.
Medium-sized at best, I'm afraid. But anyway, we'll figure it out. That's a work in progress. But for this show, we're going to start off by talking about race five. It's the Troy. We've got, I'm going to call it a theme in these races on Saturday, where we don't have ginormous fields in these stakes, but we've got a lot of star power and a lot of divisional players and some really interesting racing along the way. Those stars, as far as the Troy goes, World of Trouble, you're familiar with him, I'm sure, Pure Sensation, Disco Partner, these are major, major divisional players. I have a feeling that Disco Partner is going to be a longer, maybe not. I'm hoping Disco Partner is going to be a longer price than this morning line, and people are going to think he's not the same at age seven. That's kind of what it looked like to me at first blush. But the more I looked at the race and how it figures to unfold on paper, I can't quit him. It's Disco Partner for me one more time. JK, what do you think of the Troy?
Look, here's what's going to happen. Pure Sensation is going to try to be a rabbit. They're going to send him out there with Kendrick, and then Manny's going to be able to... World of Trouble is the most talented horse in this field. He's probably the most talented horse on the day, except for the horse that I'll probably pick in the Whitney. He'll get out. He'll run by them all. He'll make 3 to 5 look like free money. No one is going to beat World of Trouble in a turf sprint this year. It just won't happen. Not Disco Partner, not Pure Sensation. None of them. He's just too good. He relaxes, even though he's going so fast. He's not like a runoff. He's just fast. And he finishes like a Chad Brown horse in a 1.38 race on the turf in the stretch. He's not going to get beat. Now, look, I can imagine that they don't prefer the draw, and it might be closer than it has been in his last three starts. four starts, or maybe it'll be close to it was how it was in the Carter, but it's these other horses just aren't as good. I get it. You can make a case for Disco Partner. You can make a case for Pure Sensation based on some of the things they've done. But let's not forget that Rocket Heat is fast too. So Rocket Heat will go, Pure Sensation will go. And I just don't think World of Trouble has to be on the lead.
That's interesting. That's interesting. The idea of him relaxing and raiding, which we saw on the dirt in the Carter, in a ride that made me completely insane at the time, but worked out, where I felt like it was just it was passive. But now that that race exists, I do feel like you could make that case a little bit more of letting them go hammer and tongs, apparently. I feel like the hand is forced, though, and he's got to go. And pace figure-wise, Pure Sensation and Rocket Heat have faster pace numbers. I just think it's going to be a little bit of a different ball game potentially, and that's why I can't fully commit to him. But he'd obviously be on every ticket.
Now, look, I'm holding a mic with my right hand. I'm doing air quotes with my left hand.
One-handed air quotes.
Look, they can send him away from there from the rail. But like you mentioned, Pure Sensation will be in there, in my opinion, as more. He won't be a pure rabbit, but he'll be in there with a rabbit feel. And so he'll go. Rocket Heat is the fastest horse in the race early from a pace figure standpoint. They're not going to try to rate him and beat World of Trouble. So it's almost like World of Trouble is going to end up getting that pocket trip without having to get that pocket trip. You know what I mean? He's gonna break out of there just like he probably normally does. The other two are going to be on missions to get to the front, to put pressure on him. And next thing you know, Manny's sitting in the pocket, and he'll be able to tip out at the 3/8 pole and be three wide, and then he'll mow him down, and I'll get my single home. I guess I'll get it home in the pick three. Of course they did that to me, didn't they? They knew. I'll get it home in the pick three.
No, there's a late. Oh, sorry. Yep. No. I flip races. Apologies. So that's fair enough. I'd look to efficiently bet the one and the two there, and hoping the Disco Partner, I don't know, maybe everybody's going to see it like I see it. Oh, there's all the speed, Disco Partner setup. Maybe the 4-1 will be exactly right. But I was just hoping you might see closer to a 6. And at that point, I just couldn't let Disco Partner beat me.
Well, you can signal a late pick 5. So there we go. How about that? The early pick 5, excuse me. Here's what I will say today about World of Trouble. All right. I mean, I know he's a 3-5 shot, and we've spent probably entirely too long on him, but I think it's important to explain why I think he's so good. Look at his PPs and look at all of the things he has done successfully. He's done everything that you can really ask for successfully. He's won on firm going 6. He's run on good going 5.5. He's won on a grade 1 on dirt going 7. He's gone a flat 5 in the slot at Gulfstream. Tampa going 7. I mean, he's done everything they ask him to do. And I wouldn't be surprised if this horse doesn't eventually start messing around in 2-turn races again back, you know, next year when he turns 5, because, you know, he wasn't beaten horribly in the Tampa Bay Derby when Quip beat him. I mean, he was beaten 3rd by a length. He's a very talented horse, and I think he's going to have a good stallion career as well. I think he's going to be at, I'm pretty sure, Lane's Inn.
Oh, is that right? That's interesting. We'll have to, that'll be a good discussion for the In the Ring Pedigree show at some point. Talk to Sean Tugel, get his opinion there.
If I'm wrong about Lane's Inn, then, like, you know, sue me. But it's one. I'm pretty sure it's Lane's Inn that they have a deal with.
He makes sense, but they have said that they, as part of that deal, from what I was hearing, he is going to run next year. Like you said, some people might be like, well, why are you guys talking about race targets next year if the stud deal's been announced? But I'm pretty sure that's why. And you'd think that you'd only increase that value by going 2 turns on the dirt.
I bet that contracts a lot of pages with a lot of kickers, you know. It's one of the interesting things about all these deals that happen is there's all these kickers in there we don't know about, that if you do this and you do that, then you get this and you get this and you get that. There's even kickers in deals I heard recently about siblings. So if you have a horse and you have a deal for $100,000, just to make math easy because you know that I will fail at that, and you have a sibling that goes on to win a grade one, then your $100,000 could turn into $200,000 based on those kickers.
All right, let's move on to the lore, JK. Sacred Life looks like might be one of these Chad Browns who's going to be awfully tough to beat back, looking at some of the workmates and the overall form just fits against this group. You can make cases for others. Luke Cullen certainly would be on my multi-race tickets. Is it as simple as those two?
I think it, well, I'm not crazy about LeCullen. I mean, I wouldn't like talk you off or like, you know, get into a knockdown, drag out argument with you about it. I think Sacred Life is the most likely winner. I think that, you know, a lot of times we see these Chad Brown horses overcome no paces, and that won't be the case here. Obviously with Voodoo Song and Gidu, they're both going to go. I mean, I guess the biggest question for me when I look at this is like, have we seen the best of Voodoo Song? Like, is this the final tour, the exit tour as it will be? I don't know. I think that they're going to run fast in here, and I think that Sacred Life is going to get a good setup. And like we talked about, like you had mentioned earlier, Sacred Life's, if you look at XBTV and take a look at who Sacred Life has been working with, it's a very encouraging partnering.
Masha,
Ya Primo, the half-sister yesterday that ran to Sister Charlie.
Sister Nat.
Yeah, so, and then the horse that's running in the Saratoga Oaks as well, a Linden. So Chad obviously thinks a lot about this horse. It's Michael Dubb. It's Madcat. It's Chad. It's Irad. Who's riding better than Irad at the moment?
Oh, my Lord. He just is winning races in bunches.
I saw him in the parking lot yesterday, and he rolled down his window, and I said, go get Jose, and he laughed.
That's excellent. Head-to-head, Voodoo Song versus Gidu. Who you got?
Gidu. I think that Gidu will be in front of Voodoo Song just like last time. I just think maybe Voodoo Song might have lost a step, and I don't think Voodoo Song appreciates not being out there freewheeling on the front end.
All right, let's move on to the test, and we already talked with Matt Bernier about your famous, potentially infamous bet with Craig Burnick that Serengeti Empress will not win. Are we saying another grade one? Is that the official terms? Have you guys ironed that out?
Another grade one, yeah. And you know what's really awkward about it is, you know, Tom Amos is on the show, and I see him all the time. We talk. We're in meetings all the time. And every
time.
Does he
know about this?
He doesn't know, and I'm scared to tell him.
That is fantastic stuff. The bet really, win another race, win another grade one, very likely to just end up being one and the same, too, by the way. So it almost doesn't matter with the record that she has. It seems doubtful. There's a very clear path to plot that would be grade one, grade one, grade one, and breeding shed. But what do you think? Honestly, put your wager aside and tell me what you think of Serengeti Empress's chances in here. Let's get into the race that way.
I'm concerned. Well, okay, for the wager, I'm concerned. But for the race itself, if she would have drawn outside, I'd be really concerned. Like the part that makes me feel the most comfortable about the situation is that whether we get to see the real Covfefe or not, and which we'll talk about in a second, she is drawn outside of Serengeti Empress. The rail has not been good at Saratoga for the last week. Even through the rain, it kind of held up and still wasn't good. In fact, I didn't say it yesterday because I didn't want Gary to punch me. I was sitting next to him. But I was very disappointed in Joel's ride on Rocketry where he tucked him on the rail almost the entire time, going the mile and three quarters and then tipped him out. Right. Oh, and so I will say that that helps me with Covfefe being outside of Serengeti Empress, and I think that Serengeti Empress is going to be up against it. I think the 7 might be too sharp for her. Let's remember, her biggest win was the Kentucky Oaks, and that came where she was taking advantage of a moderate pace, going a mile and an eighth, and she was dead loose in there.
Moderate pace? That's not what Time for More Racing Flow say.
I don't think that it was that fat. I mean, she was loose. She wasn't looking anyone in the eyes. I mean, they were galloping.
It was a race that was meant to fall apart. I mean, Time Form has it coded red throughout. Jake has it in the Racing Flow numbers as a CFR 100. A closer is supposed to win that race 100% of the time. It was a fast pace and a monster effort.
I disagree. I thought she got loose. I thought it was a smart ride. I thought if he would have let someone else go and try to pass horses, he wouldn't have won the race. I thought that that's where she was going to do her best running was on the front end.
Well, I look at pace figures, so I'm going to make my argument with this.
I've never looked at a pace figure before, so I get your point. I think Bellafina could be sitting on a big one. I can't figure out if Bellafina doesn't like Churchill, if she doesn't like shipping, or if a mile and an eighth, mile and a 16th, is just kind of pushing her limit against good horses. Those all those questions I'm trying to figure out. But her sprint races were pretty devastating as a two-year-old. You look at her figure that she got back August 15th as a two-year-old in the Sorrento, that figure could almost win this race. and with, you know, taking the break since May, kind of resetting the Nintendo, blowing on the cartridge, putting it back in, I think maybe she could be sitting on a race. And she's going to sit right behind Serengeti Empress and Covfefe, who I would imagine are going to go. I can't imagine that Tom Amos and Jose Ortiz are going to decide to try to take Serengeti Empress back. So I think Bellafina could end up getting a great trip. And then I'll also cross my fingers and hope that Royal Charlotte continues winning her races, although she just doesn't seem like she's quite fast enough. But it's Chad Brown, it's Saratoga, it's Javier, it's an outside draw of all the other ones. She absolutely has a right to win.
Let's talk Covfefe. Will the real Covfefe please stand up? Matt Bernier makes a good case that the race last time was not as bad as the visual impression. You can certainly say, hey, even with all that, you know, the bounce word is one of the most overused things in racing. Might just apply to Covfefe. And if you want to give those sort of dual excuses, and we see this is a filly who we were talking about as, oh, can we get a future price for the filly and mare sprint just a short time ago? I think we're supposed to stick with the opinion from two back on Covfefe and have her be extremely involved here as an A, if not A plus. What do you think?
Okay, so I have a lot of things about Covfefe. All right, here we go. First of all, that spot kind of popped up out of nowhere. They weren't going to run in that spot. I think we all remember they were going to wait for the test. So it felt like that, like maybe she needed to run, and they said, let's hurry up and get it out of the way now.
Sounds a little bit like Maximum Security.
Right. Let's get it out of the way now. Let's not wait until later, until it gets a little bit dicier. Let's just get it out of the way now, and then we'll have plenty of time to get her back. We'll get that bounce out of the way. I'm doing the air quotes again.
Yeah.
Look at the bounce out of the way, and then we can kind of recharge the batteries and go from here. Now, the other thing is, I remember I told you guys that when I was there at Churchill with Gary Stevens, and him and Ricardo Santana have a great relationship. We watched the race with Ricardo afterwards, and Ricardo was telling us how he race rode the horse, how he was throwing crosses, because every time he threw a cross with his hand coming close to Covfefe, she was shying away from it. Just a young horse that hasn't had a lot of experience. Me of Mischief obviously beat her that day. Okay, those are some positives that I think she could improve from. Here are some negatives. Mia Mischief came back and ran awful, and so did Awestruck. Mm-hmm. Came back and rode and ran awful. So that's a concern for me, that race just wasn't very good. And if you look at that figure that she earned at Pimlico in the Miss Preakness, I think it's the Miss Preakness,
yep,
or the,
you got it.
Okay, the Dina Springs part threw me off. It's almost looking like a little bit of an outlier.
Oh, it definitely looks like an outlier. 70, 84, 107, 84.
And so that's a little concerning. And then I will say this, and this is a hard thing for me to say, but it's honest, because I have heard from a couple of horsemen that there's a lot of things that Sean Bridgman does really well, but as a finisher, there's other guys that are stronger. So I should probably stop eating ice cream and jog. So I'm not knocking anyone. The switch to Joel Rosario is a huge switch. He's arguably the strongest finishers in the game. And
he's right on that list.
Having a great meet. So interested to see how that all works out with him there. I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that even if she doesn't win, she will be involved and she will be an issue for Mr. Burnick and Glen Hill Farm.
All right. Let's make you put the feet to the fire here. Who's the pick?
Bellafina. Wow. I've tried to beat
that's
her 197 times
in
my
shocking
life. Right. I mean, I want Covfefe, but I really worry about the kind of the change in plans, the outlier part, and I also am concerned about whether or not that race was really that good with Mia Mischief coming back not running well. Mia Mischief has an outlier figure too that she earned in the Humana Distaff, which makes me question how good she might really be. Awestruck has just kind of been like a glorified allowance filly who's run well in times and can be competitive in stakes and da-da-da-da, but she's no world beater either. And so I just wonder, it just makes me a little bit nervous. I think that in a multi-race situation, I would like to just get away with Bellafina and Covfefe.
Okay, fair enough. And yeah, for me, multi-race, I don't know. I think Royal Charlotte probably. I wouldn't be wanting Royal Charlotte to beat me. In an ideal world, I don't think I'd be wanting Serengeti Empress to beat me. I'd like to see Bellafina win outside of Southern California, so I'm okay fading her.
I think you can get into trouble when you start looking at where Chad Brown's horses are training. Oh, they're at Belmont. Oh, they're not at Saratoga. Oh, they're at Monmouth. But I think when you're looking at grade ones, I think that you can then – that counts. The fact that he has this undefeated filly who is going to be running in one of the biggest grade ones at Saratoga and she's down at Belmont, it makes me wonder. I mean, I don't know. Look, maybe she likes it down there. Maybe that's where her comfort zone is. Maybe last summer she hated it here. She trained poorly. Whatever. Maybe her exercise rider that she's comfortable with is stationed down there, so they kept her down there. There's a lot of reasons. Yeah. But I just took notice of it, and just to, you know, I think you probably should too.
All right, fair enough. I haven't made any final decisions yet, but that's where I'm sitting now. We'll talk about it again over the weekend. We got the live event at the track, 9:30 on Saturday. And then, of course, we're going to be across the street at the Brentwood at 10:30. Did you look at that cocktail menu? There's like, it like seems like six things you drink.
Yeah, you know, I was actually a little bit frustrated earlier when you said that this show and that show would be the same. But I clearly don't see any adult beverages served to me at this moment. So
Do you want a breakfast beer? I've got some good stuff in there.
No, I've got a long day. I've got the meeting at 10:30. And then we've got the big fellas here. The Prince of Keeneland, I don't know if he's going to be trying to get his druthers on at some point today.
No doubt about it.
He was there yesterday.
He's see a 7-foot-tall man with a baby in druthers, say Pete and JK say hi.
There's a hilarious picture of Caroline in druthers, and she's ear-to-ear smiling. She knows.
It's genetic. It's genetic.
It's genetic. So, the other thing about this race real quick that I just wanted to say is that I was talking to Paul Matisse yesterday, who's doing – the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation's props this week.
Oh, very cool.
And he did he turned one in. I don't know if they ended up using it, but it's a good one anyways. He did one that was, will a horse that ran in the Kentucky Oaks win the test, which would be Serengeti Empress, Bellafina, and I believe Jeltran. So I thought that was a kind of a cool one.
That's a very cool one. I'd obviously given my opinion be on the other side of it, but it's a smart, and it should be around 50-50. Paul, as sharp as they come. That contest was really fun last week. Heck, we should get those guys to have us go over all the props every week. I think that would be a blast. No time to do it on this show, unfortunately.
When Bernick gives me the new Thoroughbred Idea Foundation hat and the orange trucker hat with the little light bulb in the front,
very fresh hat.
Then maybe we'll take care of it.
Hats for show. Well, we'll talk about them every week anyway, and let folks know. I think the easiest way to sign up is racingthinktank.com. JK's nodding his head. He's muting to get rid of the janky new microphone, but it's going to be okay. I'll get a windscreen for that, and we'll be a windscreen and a stand, and I actually think it'll work. This is total host fail stuff. Nothing that JK did, that's for sure. Let's talk Whitney before we get out of here, and I have a feeling we're going to have the same not terribly clever ideas, but let's hear. Have you come up with anything more creative since we talked about this race in Prospect a while back?
No, a horse is going to gallop. I think McKenzie's the best older horse in training. I think the mile and an eighth is perfect for him. Don't get me wrong. I still think the horse will get a mile and a quarter, especially with that being the next target. You know, remember what Bob did with American Pharoah. He trained him, I think, maybe 7-8 weeks up until the Grand Slam, to the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, he didn't run from the Travers to the Breeders' Cup.
So, you know, look, and don't get me wrong, American Pharoah was no one was questioning his ability to get a mile and a quarter based on what he did in the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. A
little race called the Belmont Stakes.
But McKenzie is a horse that I think that when trained in that direction, Bob will be able to get him to be able to go that mile and a quarter. This race is a mile and an eighth. I think it's going to fit him perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. I think the racetracks out in California have been deeper than normal for obvious reasons because of the situations they've had. I think that a deeper racetrack is perceived to be a safer racetrack, less concussion when you hit the ground. And so I think these horses are going to come over here fit. Not that Bob's horses don't come here fit anyways, not that he needed that to get this horse right. But I think McKenzie's going to absolutely gallop. He's tactical. Mike Smith is going to be ultra focused based on the ride that was given last time that caused Benny Southstreet to make mistakes and have to give Michelle Yu champagne.
Do we get any of that, by the way?
No, you know what's funny is he tried to get, I saw him at Del Mar last weekend and he tried to get a little chippy with me. And I said, hey, big fella, don't forget you also volunteered to get a tattoo of blame. So you better pipe down over there. You better pipe down.
Mrs. Southstreet is not going to appreciate that. Oh my God.
But I just think he's the best horse in the race. I think that he's tactical. I think that he's doing well from all accounts, what I've heard. I ran into someone close to the horse over the other night, and when I said, "How's he doing?" he giggled.
That's the giggle test,
which I think is fun. And when you look through the race, I mean, the horses that I would fear, there's two of them. One of them I don't think wants a mile and an eighth, Thunder Snow. I think that the mile, don't be fooled by the Met Mile. He did run well in there, but he also spent a lot of time on that good rail, which will obviously help and upgrade the performance there. And Matoli was burying other horses for him to pick up late.
That's a very important point.
So, and don't get me, I'm not knocking Thunder Snow. He's a horse that I would use as an A horse if they were running the Breeders' Cup Classic today. I just don't think that this is what he wants to do against this group in these circumstances. And then Preservationist, obviously, Jimmy Jerkins has him going in the right direction, reportedly had foot issues leading throughout his entire career. Why you see all the layoff lines, and this will be the first time I think he's going to be able to run together three races in a row as he's, you know, well, as in recent, I guess he did it back in 17 and 18, but for a second and a half. But so I think he's going to run well, but I just don't think he's as good as McKenzie. And then poor Yoshida, the horse that I love so much. I just don't know. I don't think he's going to get the setup that he needs here. I think he does need a setup. And I would be very interested to see what they do with him next after this. I think maybe just a complete change up.
Back to the turf.
For him. Back to the turf. Is that what Sean said? Or
when you say complete change up, that's what I hear.
I'd like to see him run the four go.
Oh, that kind of.
I know it's kind of kooky and weird, and I know that it's like, what? He's not getting there at a mile and a quarter. How's he going to get there?
No,
I just think
the pace
that, like,
will be totally different. He'll have something to run into and make that same wide move that made him win the Woodward last year.
Just think it's just interesting. And maybe he's up the track and nowhere, right? But I just, you know, or turf is fine. I still want to see him on the lead in a turf race, but like he did when he was at Keeneland when we fell in love with him.
Yeah, I like that. I like all those ideas. We'll see how it works out for him in the Whitney. I do want to talk about the pace of this race a little bit with you, because I do think, and we talked about this with Matt at the beginning of the show, on pace figures, you could make a case that it could be Thunder Snow out there winging, something that he's done successfully in Dubai. And assuming if the rail is no bueno and somebody in the backyard will call Sumion and let him know, and he can have that trip that we saw from a few horses last week where they're two or three wide, not on the rail wire. Would he be dangerous, or do you see no scenario in which Mike Smith doesn't at least make a move to try to break Thunder Snow?
I mean, I think McKenzie will probably be on the lead. I think that's, you know, that's Bob's MO when he's got the best horse. That's Mike's MO when he's got the best horse. It's like, why jack around? Like, let's just put this thing on the lead. We're best. We are going to have no stones in our way. Mike will be plugged in. If there's a part of the racetrack that's better, he'll put McKenzie there on the lead or not.
You got to be careful to say plugged in when you're talking about jockeys.
Well, you know what I mean.
Tuned in. That's better.
Thunder Snow.
We don't want a Billy Patton situation.
I just don't think Thunder Snow is fast enough in a mile and an eighth setting in North American racing to get the lead. You know, I think he is,
but not with that gorilla to his outside.
That's true, too. And then, you know, another thing that we should, I don't know if you saw it or not, and if you didn't, then you won't have any comment, but did you see Jerry Bailey's comments on Christophe Soumillon that they did the day that we had the heat wave and NBC had, like, their, like, preview show?
No, you got to tell me about
this. Buried him. Said that, like, I'd move the horse up 10 lengths. They need to switch the rider.
Even now?
Yeah, he just was like, he's just talking about how, you know, Christophe was doing that you know, butt on the saddle thing. And the butt on the saddle.
I'm pantomiming the European style. I mean, it obviously works perfectly over there. And some of it has to do, I think, with rules. And some of what looks awkward to us is because of the specifics of the rules. There was the famous tales out of Ascot about Johnny just from riding in American style, not doing anything abusive to a horse, but things that are legal there are not necessarily legal here. So I think that's part of why. But it's also just, it's just like, it's almost like a fashion. It's just, we should really get a rider to talk about that. That would be fascinating.
Gary actually told me, Gary Stevens told me that
he rode there forever. He rode for Michael Stout.
When the rider, you know, I always thought it was like sloppy looking when they let their butts hit the saddle.
It doesn't look good.
He said it's almost like another form of encouragement, but it's legal encouragement there. You know, you can't. Because it's when you hit down with their butt, that's it, like, propels them forward.
That's so interesting. But that's so what was the main knock on Sumion, and what ride was he talking about?
I don't want to paraphrase, because I'm obviously saying that
right.
But essentially the point was that he thinks that American Rider, like, would fit this horse better. That was my perception of what he was saying, because he said that Sumion was, you know, all over the place and doing the butt to the saddle thing.
Well, that's very interesting. It will be Sumion in the saddle, and I would not be looking to criticize a man who's won all the huge races that he is, but Jerry Bailey obviously knows a heck of a lot more than me on this topic. I think it's fascinating. Be curious to have a European perspective. I think it would probably be rather different. Let's put it that way. All right, do you have a closing thought before we wrap this edition of the In the Money Players podcast?
Whitney Weekend. This is exciting. I'm excited about Concrete Rose today.
Yes.
For our friend Bo Bromagen and BBN Racing, 2-5. Pretty impressive. If you think about it, she broke her maiden going 5.5 turf sprinting here for Rusty Arnold, who doesn't win that much first out. So she wins 5.5 at Saratoga, and then she just won the Grade 1 mile and a quarter race, and she's 2-5 in a mile and 3/16 race at Saratoga. It's pretty impressive. I know Bo's excited. And there, you know, I don't really know a lot about the Europeans in there. It doesn't seem like there's any world beaters, so I'm looking forward to watching her run today. Saratoga Derby on Sunday should be fun. Hindley's Joy last time was the time. 4-1 morning line. They asked me on air, and I red boarded a little bit. I don't care. I said, and I felt kind of dirty after I did it. I said I liked her last time, but don't worry, I didn't cash one ticket. I liked him. I did a her. I liked him last time, but I didn't cash a ticket, so I'm not bragging. I'm just saying that should be a fun race. Chad's got his horses in there. Rock, what's do you know what I'm talking about? He ran last time. Rock Emperor,
yeah.
and also Digital Age is coming back too. So it should be a fun race, fun weekend.
Double R's favorite horse. He gave that one out at Tampa.
You should have heard him the other night. He was going on about how much he was going to bet all his money in the entire Derby contest on Digital Age and didn't. But he still scored out pretty good. So. Fun weekend. This is my favorite weekend. This is before I was an 8-week Saratoga guy. This was like my target. This is where I came. And when are we birthdaying for you? When's
Saturday
the official?
Night after
is
the official? Yeah, my birthday is Sunday. The party is Saturday night after the Whitney. If you see us at the Paddock Bar, you can probably wrangle an invite. But yeah, that's good. It's a fun weekend. It really, really feels like Saratoga now with all the breeding industry people. I recommend folks check out the In the Ring show from this week. We had great guests in Carl McEntee and Anna Seitz, remember, who helped us out with the World Horse Players Tour premiere last year, and she's just great. And so we got a little bit of a look at what's going on in the sale. We'll certainly be covering that after the fact. My only other closing thought, and I'll ask it in the form of a question. Do you know who turns 30 tomorrow, speaking of birthdays?
I think I do. Is it TV's Matt Bernier?
TV's Matt Bernier, 30 years old, a 20-something no more. And I think his bio at the old place buried on the blog page still had him as a 23-year-old handicapper. But it's been a fun 7 years, that's for sure. That's going to be great to have him in the mix as well. If you're around the Paddock Bar, come and say hi. If you need to be sorted out with Saratoga accommodations and you want to sit in the coolest place at the track, reach out to me. We'll get you booked for a table downstairs or encourage you to rent the upstairs privately. I've been having a lot of fun stepping up and working with the team over there at the Paddock Bar, especially Amy and Desiree. And Sunday, it's going to be the bar up in the veranda is going to be open. I'm making cocktails, so that's going to be fun. Des, I believe, will be behind the stick, and I will be sort of assisting. So that's going to be fun. Little speakeasy Sunday. Great day to come by and say hi. Lots of chances to interact with the crowd, and we always enjoy that. So please come by and see us. And that's going to do it for this edition of the In the Money Players podcast. Want to thank our sponsors, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, Black Type Thoroughbreds, Stats Race Lens, 10 Strike Racing, so many who've helped get us off the ground and we've had a lot of fun with in this maiden year of the In the Money Players podcast. I want to thank you, JK, Matt Bernier. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you for listening and making the show so much fun to do, especially those of you who've helped us out by supporting the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. And I should mention that the Brentwood, this whole series of seminars is for another terrific charity we'll be talking about more on the show at some point, the Jockey Club Safety Net, who are doing some great work helping people who work in the industry who are in need. And I'm really thrilled to be helping them out in a tiny way. But anyway, so get out to all those things. You know, a lot of fun, and we should have some good times. All right, we're out of here. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney, fine handicapper as well. Gave out that big winner last weekend. Somehow managed to not cash a ticket. Hopefully he's going to be writing something else this weekend, and he'll give another $30 horse and actually make some money on it. There's this bet called the Win Bet, Drew. You might want to look into it. The old pick one. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatale. May you win all your photos. Hey, everybody, just wanted to give a word for our latest partner, Stats Race Lens. This is a product that is definitely worth checking out. You can even get discounts if you use the promo code STATSITM. We're talking about customizable PPs with comprehensive research abilities, video replays, advanced search and notifications, access to Stats True Odds, handicapping angles, and back testing. That's what Scott Coles used to help him win the NHC this year, and he's talked about on this show. It's mobile and tablet friendly. Stats Race Lens, bringing clarity to handicapping. And make sure you use the promo code STATSITM, STATSITM.